Janine, we're live. Welcome to the podcast. Thank you for joining.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure. We've done some sessions recently, and we can go into specifics about some of the stuff that's come up for me personally, which I think is always fun to share for those that are listening out there. But a lot of people won't have an absolute clue who you are. So we'll start at the very beginning, which is a bit about what you do, basically. And a specific question being that I know that you started your life as a pre-IPO trader, mm-hmm. and what you do today is very different to that. So I'll let you take it from there, and there'll be all sorts of things that come up that I can draw from.
Okay, great. Sure. Well, today, as of today, I am, I guess, what we would call an intuitive healer. That to me, though, incorporates many things. My journey has been far and wide, close to 30 years now doing this professionally. I can't believe that comes out of my mouth, but it's true. So I currently take a mix of everything I've learned along the way, which is astrology that's learned. I'm a holistic health practitioner, HHP. I've studied traditional Chinese medicine in California and in China. I was a massage teacher, yoga teacher. I do Reiki and certified yoga instructor as well. I'm not teaching yoga at the time, but I know, you know, how to bring that into my work. So right now I'm an intuitive healer. I'm intuitive from birth. And so I've learned that's like the main piece of it. And when clients come, I just, you know, hone in on whatever is going on in their life in the moment, or if they want to look at like the bigger dynamics and cycles. And I bring all these pieces that I've learned to just kind of show them who they are, and then all the bits and bobs that they're not. And then we anchor that centerpiece of who they are and learn how to kind of work with the extraneous stuff that those dynamics are over with. So yeah.
Cool. I love the idea, generally speaking, of taking inspiration from different places. And so we are all intuitive. We're all problem-solving machines. Like, point yourself at a problem and you'll eventually solve it. But right. You can take inspiration from lots of different seemingly unconnected experiences to create a solution. And that's where humans are just so unbelievably smart. What does it mean to help someone understand who they are?
That's a great question. To me, it's that unobstructed neutral zone that we all know is in there. It's that feeling tone space that we settle in on, and sometimes we'll be stronger with that settling in. Sometimes it'll waft in here and there, you know, amidst our emotions or our thoughts. But because I'm highly empathic and intuitive, and I could, you know, see different things also through the chart and all the ways that I do my work, I call it out. I reflect it back to them. I can pinpoint it. I hone in on it. I bear witness to it. And then I hold the space for that until it becomes more solid of a space within them. And so then they go out, and it's almost as if it's kind of they're recalibrated energetically to it and consciously to that space. And then they're able to work with it more. Because really, the whole part of, you know, any type of spiritual practice is to actually carry that work forth into your life. It isn't necessarily just about a retreat or, you know, a tool or something that could make bad things go away. It's about integrating this deeper truth of who you are into all the areas of your life. So I help with that.
Awesome. And I like that the output is a practical implementation of it, i.e. Yeah. Your day-to-day life should be different after doing this.
Yes.
And it's like a simple example, like you'll get someone who'll be like, I can do marketing for you. So, okay, what are you selling? Brand awareness. Okay, how do you measure that? And they're like, oh, well, it's just brand awareness. So, okay, well, that doesn't work for me. Whereas someone will come along and say, right, we're going to increase the hit rate on your website by this amount, and we're going to get the click through to this, and we're going to increase revenue by blah, blah, blah. To use a business analogy to what you just described, it's so important to have a way of actually getting tangible results. Because I'm sure there's a lot of people out there in the, like, even to use the phrase intuitive healer space, that would be like, oh, don't worry, we'll just improve your brand awareness.
Right. I don't really go. I don't know. That's, yes, I know it's out there. You're right, Jake. It's out there.
So, rather than giving you a broader question on this, to use myself as a specific example, a story I'd love to talk through today, which I think gives great context to what you have the ability to do, mm-hmm. is we did a session where you take my birth date, time, and location, and you're able to map who I am against a set of, it's basically wisdom, right?
Right.
Or knowledge. Mm-hmm. And take us through that process that we ran through and the crazy story about how in a past life, I was a pastor and I had a connection mm-hmm. with my now daughter. We'll get to that later, I think. But when you take someone's birth date, time, location, like, what are you able to help them understand?
Right. Well, what I love to say about astrology is that, first of all, it's thousands of years old, and just about every culture on the planet, well, you know, that I'm aware of, I'm sure there's others as well, but they had some form of astrology, and it's really just patterning of numbers based on where everything is at in the sky. And I don't want to minimize it down to that. There's, you know, that's a piece of it, is understanding the patterning. And then there's the interpretive portion, like who I am as an interpreter. But essentially those stars, you know, this ancient wisdom has given us the archetypes and the patternings to learn from. And so when you're born, you have a birth chart. Whatever the sky was doing that day is yours and yours alone. And a fun way to look at it is that it's really a reflection of you in numeric format, maybe based on how you're standing in the earth, looking up at the heavens. And so nobody else has that but you, even a twin per se. There's something a little bit different about them, maybe a minute or two off. Things could be very similar. And then the soul comes and that's a little different as well. But there's everything that's in that birth chart will remain with you from birth till the end of your physical existence. And everyone you meet, everything that'll happen will be ignited by the current sky as you go along. So everything is there. And so when you learn how to read this patterning and you learn about the triggers that happen along the way, it's crazy bizarre. And I try to find holes in it. I've been trying to find holes in it for years, but it's just profound how proficient it is in sharing the blueprint of your life, your personality, your needs, your trauma, your family life, your partners, your work, all of it. It's right there.
And so the birth chart is in a way a map.
Yeah.
And you can look at certain behaviors. Would it be fair to say, like, when you take someone through a birth chart, what is the output of that experience that you're trying to give someone?
Right. It depends on what they're asking for, because you can read a chart till the end, till you just, you don't stop, because there's so much there. And it depends on too, like, you have all these different angles in your birth chart. And then we have today's sky, we match that. And so there's different things happening at different times. But when I first read for somebody per se, I will take a look at some of the main characteristics, like their sun sign, like, when is your birthday, right? Your sun sign is?
I'm June, so Gemini.
So Gemini, right? And then sun, moon, and rising. Those are what I call the big three. And the sun kind of gives you an idea of how you handle, how you look at the world consciously, like the main light, because the sun is the light. Mm-hmm. And then the rising sign is kind of how you play on the earth plane, how everything's oriented based on you. And it was what planets were rising at your birth, how the world sees you, how kind of how you interact with the world, because it's, you know, the earth and the sky came together at that rising point. And then there's the moon, and that has more to do with what you need when nobody's around, what your emotional needs are, because the moon is not a luminary. It doesn't light up. It lights up when the sun reflects on it. And so it's very subconscious. It reflects our subconscious needs. So those are the main three. And then I also look at the nodes. I mean, I look at so much, but the nodes will tell you the strength and the karma that you're coming in with, the south node, what you've already mastered, what you're coming in with, what you want to let go of. And then the dharma is where you're headed. So, you know, a lot of times people come in, they'll say, well, what's my soul purpose? Or, you know, how do I see the world? And sometimes just reflecting that back to them. I know even myself, when I look at my chart, when I first started to learn to read it properly, I was like, oh my gosh, that explains everything. And you could put down maybe so many feelings of I'm why am I like this? Why do I feel this way? Why am I drawn to certain things? It's amazingly all right there.
If anyone listening hasn't seen one of these birth charts, they are really complex. Like, yes. When I look at it, I'm like, what is that?
I know it's a lot to take in.
But that's where the skill of someone like yourself comes in, because you help to actually understand the information. Like anything, right? You know, you could be looking at a balance sheet of a company and it's like, I don't understand what that says. Whereas someone will look at it and be like, don't go near that thing. Or, ooh, that looks really interesting. The process of helping someone understand that, like, how does it influence someone's decision making once they get that picture?
Right. Well, oftentimes what I love to bring to the table is that they feel more settled. And most people, when they come to me, at least my intention when I work with my clients, is that, you know, most times it's already in them. They're already feeling it. They're already sensing it. Or maybe they're on the cusp of it. You know, it's in there already. And so when I name it, when I say it, when I deliver it to them, they feel more solid, and perhaps they could make better decisions. Maybe they say, well, if I'm meant to feel this way and I'm meant to be an expressor, then I shouldn't feel so bad about expressing the way I'm expressing. Or, my gosh, look what's coming up in a transit. That's where maybe some of the planets are hitting some of their birth stuff. It's like, wow, look what's going on in my life right now. Maybe I shouldn't feel so bad and just let it happen. It's happening. So it's triggered. I didn't do anything wrong to make that happen. And all in all, I feel it just gives people some strength and some empowerment and some understanding that, you know, there's something bigger going on here. There's something way bigger. And it's like music. It's time for that note. It's time to play it and hopefully surrender and feel strong and just go for it. Hmm. Yeah.
And something that resonates for me very strongly, Janine, is this, in particular as an investor, you get paid for your decision-making. Very simple. Either you're right or you're wrong. And that's the beauty of capitalism. And it's not a nasty word. No. If anything, it's actually, it's nature, right?
Yes.
You made a bet and it went well, or you made a bet and it went very badly. Right. And that's okay.
Right.
But what I love is investing in decision-making. And so to use a specific example that both my wife and I have had sessions with you recently around the location that we're currently living,
right?
And how do you decide where the right place to live is? And in some ways you go round and round and round and round in circles, and you know there's always somewhere else that's going to be slightly better. But if you can make a reasoned judgment by taking, you know, whichever tools off the shelf you might choose to use, right, and you go, oh, actually I now feel more comfortable about this. So that would be one example. Like, how does what you're able to read help someone decide where they might want to live, like as a specific use case? And like, we looked at the map, right? And we could see those energy lines, for example. Yeah.
Well, it's, I feel like they come with three different places, you know, what about this one, that one, or this one? And when you feel it out, when you see it via the chart, and then also I have the intuitive capacity. So I love the magic number of three. That's just kind of how I roll.
Yeah.
Or if something feels strong within me, you know, so I not only look, I hear it intuitively, I'll get that message intuitively, and then maybe I'll look at the chart, you know, what's going on with their transits, and then I'll look at the astrocartography, which is what we did for you. And, you know, when you feel into things and you get that extra boost, I feel like it gives somebody support to say, okay, you know, we may not be finding where we have to be here yet, but this is the place. Or, you know, we were considering that over there. Now I understand why it wasn't feeling quite right. I couldn't put my word to it. I couldn't put my finger on it, but I understand now why maybe it isn't quite right for us. And so I feel it always helps people, again, kind of lean into what they were already feeling on the inside. Or maybe not, you know, maybe it also can open up an idea of someplace they hadn't even thought of. Maybe it wasn't on the radar. They didn't even give that to themselves. And then it shows up. We're like, hey, did you ever decide this? Did you ever think about that? And then something new floats in. So,
and again, to use like a business analogy, but to double down on your position when it's going well is a great call. But to do that, you need conviction. And so right. if you can take a piece of information that, for example, you're able to help tee up and go, okay, I'm actually more convinced than ever that this is the right decision. That right. helps. Flip side of that is maybe the answer was hiding in plain sight, and this is a sunk cost, and you got to cut your loss. And a very, very simple psychology for all investors is you hold on to your losses a lot longer than you hold on to your gains. And so the quicker you can realize that actually you're trying to push water uphill, this is a bad allocation. Right. Get out.
Right.
The better.
Yes.
Wow, it's so cool, isn't it? And even just now, trying to think about how you can use these things is getting my brain going.
It's fantastic. I love it.
Where I'm going to go, Janine, now is so that's a bit about how astrology can be helpful, and it's basically it's an assistance to help you understand why you feel the way you do, and equally to guide decision making.
Right.
The past life stuff that you work on is, I just had a workout this morning, and my PT I was telling this story to, and it really, oh, even now it's getting me fired up. But let me tell the whole story. And
tell the whole story. I love the story. I'm going to get my tea. Go for it.
Yeah. So I emigrated to Australia 31st December 2019. And my mother-in-law gifted me on arrival a bottle of wine. And it's made by a producer called Henschke. And they're in South Australia, close to Adelaide. And it's called the Hill of Grace. It's a very famous vineyard that they have. And with that, I also, I don't think it was at that time, but I saw then a book in a wine store about the vineyard. So I bought the book, and it's the family history. And it turns out that, so two brothers, they were from a Prussian village, dirt poor, and mid-1800s, they're like, we got to find a way out of it. This is fucked. And so with their wives and kids, they traveled to Hamburg to try and get transit to the U.S., and along the way, they met some religious character, a pastor of some form, and he actually got them passage to Australia. Now, this guy started off with four kids and a wife. One child died in Hamburg. And then in the 3 months sailing from Hamburg, south of South Africa, across to Australia, his wife died and another child died. And they were, you know, thrown overboard at sea. So he arrived in Adelaide with his brother and his family, minus two kids and minus a wife. I mean, talk about like a strenuous journey. Yeah. And I was like, oh, wow, I just got off the plane. How much easier was it for me than that?
Right,
And they basically, they settled in Adelaide, moved into the Adelaide Hills, ended up in the Barossa Valley, which is now one of the most famous wine countries in the world. And the Hill of Grace is grown on a piece of land that this guy's descendants now manage, and it's still a family business.
Amazing.
And for some reason, and this is where the hairs on my neck are going, for some reason, that story resonated with me so strongly. And I was like, wow, what an incredible story. And then I had a session with you, with Lauren together, and we were trying to work on some stuff for my daughter. And you told me that I'd had a past life. And in that past life, I was a pastor, and I was actually in Australia. So As a soul, I've done this trip before. And on my journey here previously, I lost my wife and children.
Yep.
And I met Ruby, my eldest daughter, who was the youngest of a female, all-female family, who was very poorly treated by her sisters and aunties and mother. And so as a pastor in this previous life, I scooped up this young girl and looked after her as if my daughter. And this particular iteration of life in the physical reality is an opportunity for Ruby and I to reconnect as a father and daughter. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, what the hell? Where has that come from? And then when I thought about how much that Henschke story resonated with me, and it's like, hang on, in your physical reality, why do some things resonate and other things don't? And what if it's the case that actually that really spoke to me because I did that in another life?
I know.
And you're like, how do we even get there, Janine? Teach me how you got into learning about this stuff and where it comes from.
I love that story, Jake. And actually, I remember that was the first reading. And I was, can I share a little bit? I mean, I won't.
Please. No, okay. Go ahead.
you and sweet Lauren, you guys were coming in together, and I was like, uh-oh, this is all about Jake right now. So I went, that's all I got. That's all I was getting. And it was big. And I didn't know anything about you. We hadn't looked at your chart yet. Nothing. Like, this was just you, like the raw reading, and the past life was kind of screaming out loud. And yeah. So then I think later you told me in, I can't remember where, maybe another session or whatnot, a little bit about that background, how much that story just rang true to your soul. Like before you.
Well, it was after that. It was after that initial reading that I then thought about how that winery story had spoken to me. Yeah.
That's right. And so what I say to that is that, you know, there's the saying that, you know, everything is energy first. And that isn't a spiritualism. That's like quantum physics. I would say that everything is energy. And this is something that science and spirituality kind of go hand in hand with. So having said that, you know, when I see somebody and, you know, we have a lifetime, it's not just this life that I see your expanded energetic imprint, like what you come here with, your traumas, your masteries. And on top of it, like in order for you to have that feeling, like you were asking, why would I have that feeling? Why do some people have that feeling and not others? It's because we draw in energetically that which we are. My belief after all these years of really consciously doing this is that you cannot see something that you're not. And we do see things. It's almost like we sift through things. And then when something really stands out, it's because it's an echo saying, hey, I'm over here. And it is a draw. It is a deeper truth that, you know, our consciousness can't embrace. Now, a great number system to look at, the old IPO trader in me loves the numbers. And, you know, in psychology, they say 5% of what we deal with in this world comes from our conscious realm. Let's say even if we gave it 10%, the other 95 to 90% is our subconscious. So to me, it's like, well, why don't we go to that subconscious then? The subconscious is like a submarine. It's the conscious, you know, it's the stuff that that's not in the forefront that we feel. The moon is the subconscious. It's the emotional part. It's the goosebumps. It's the, hey, this calls to me. I don't know why. Because why is the consciousness? The feeling tone are the depths of who we are. And so you are drawn to that because that was you. And then I'll come in and I'll name it. And whoop, there it is. And now you could do something with it. And you are here to kind of pick up where you left off. You know, go over that old story, re-feel it again, except Jake is in a different time and space. He has a different capacity. He had an airplane, not a ship. And you have, you know, a connection with that beautiful daughter of yours that wanted to be full and rich in that life, but for whatever reason, it couldn't. So now it's yours in this way. Hmm. And she didn't have any men in her life in that time other than you. And so she longed for that father, and here you guys are. And you could be with that in a great way.
Oh, it's almost making me a bit emotional. The process of being a dad is so hard sometimes, you know, yeah. Like you just want to kind of throttle them. You're like, shut up.
I'm a mama. I totally understand. Yeah,
I know you do. And you're like, yeah, oh my God. But when I have this kind of information in my hands and I'm able to take a small break from the day to day, you know.
Right. Like, yeah.
When you're in the action, it's like, you know, sometimes you can't. Mm-hmm. Mm-mm. I fail to stay calm the entire time. Let's just leave it as that.
Oh, no, neither
but
do I.
When I hear things like this, they do speak to me very strongly, and you get this deep sense of gratitude. You get to do this. Like, how incredible is that?
Right.
And so someone out there might listen to what we're talking about right now, but I actually have a deep sense of gratefulness for being in the position I'm now in. And that can't be a bad thing.
Right.
So it's really fascinating where inspiration can come from that actually results in a real sense of it's a mindset, essentially, isn't it? You're investing in your mindset from a set of tools that some people don't even know exist. Whoa. And so let's dive into this idea of the subconscious, Janine, because
right.
So you can't see what you're not. What does that mean? Let's do that first, and then we'll talk about the subconscious.
Okay, great. And before I get into that, what I'd love to just want to kind of go back to something that you said about mindset. I love to call it a soul set. Like, it's not just a mindset, but I mean, think about it. Really, like how you said your deep gratitude, you know, in that lifetime when you lost your whole family. I mean, the reason why you were going was to build that family, and then you lost it. And I remember
the trauma is just nuts, right?
The trauma was crazy, and you almost lost yourself.
I'm hugging myself.
You almost lost yourself in that visual, I remember. And so you're like, okay, well, if I'm going to keep living, it's got to be this way. And so every day it was a reluctant, godly step. Mm-hmm. And yet you're like, this is what I will do. No more kids, no more family, but it yearned, like you cried for it. But in, you know, just to be loyal to them, that's what you did. And so now, like, where does that come from? Some people, I'm not saying that everybody's grateful, like everybody's joyful and grateful for their children, but some people, there's a different hunger or yearning or, you know, almost like an embracing of what that means to them for a different soul. So it's where your mindset meets your soul set. Cool. And you come in with that. Yeah.
Oh my God, there's like 1,000 questions. But so your soul set, is that something that you are born with, or is that something that you can actually alter? And in my opinion, your mindset is absolutely something you can play around with.
Right.
You know, the education you can do in personal development is infinite in many ways.
Right.
You know, what even is religion, right? And the idea of I'm mainly thinking Buddhism at this point, right? But is the soul set something that you can also engineer, or is that something that's just given to you?
To me, the soul set feels like your blueprint. Okay. I mean, I know we said that the
kind chart, of like your birth chart is
Kind of like your birth chart. It's kind of like saying, I'm going to go to France for 2 months in the summer. And when I'm there, I want to see the Eiffel Tower. I want to go to the Lavender Fields. I want to make sure I go to a great chocolate, a little biscuit place, and the ocean. And for the rest of the days, I don't care. Mm. Whatever happens, happens. It'll enrich my experience. But those main things I want to do, I need to do. And so it does feel like, you know, when we come in, is it alterable? Well, the way I see it as well is, imagine that you have a summer home in the Hamptons or whatever, and you love reading books on the beach, and you have a really thick book, and every summer you get as far as you can, you put the bookmark in, and then you leave it for next year. You come back the next summer and you don't necessarily just pick up where you left off. You kind of start a couple chapters before to re-immerse yourself in the story. But you're coming back, and you're coming back different, but it's the same story. But you come back different, and so your perspective is different. Your capacity is different. Where's your soul been that you have different tools to meet this? So it's the story is the same, but perhaps you're meant to walk over the threshold and bring it to a different ending, bring it to a different point of expansion that you just couldn't be in that other time and space.
Again, I've got too many questions that I can ask, Janine. Let's cycle back to this idea of you can't see what you're not.
Right. Yeah. Well, again, it's just, you know, there's a saying that the world isn't, or somebody isn't what somebody else thinks they are. It's, or the world isn't what it is. It's what we think they are. Because the only thing we can see is our perception of something. And so from that same concept of, you know, all we could see is our own perception. Like, we don't see the world as it is. That's the quote. You don't see the world as it is. We see it as we are. And so in that as well, you know, that's one iteration. But you cannot see anything that you're not. And again, everything is energy first. And that brings up to me the law of attraction. And a lot of people use the law of attraction actively, right, to kind of bring things into their life. And I love that. I feel like it's a great way to strengthen the tool of your mind, sharpen the tool of your mind and your consciousness. But we cannot use it to control everything. We cannot use it to control an outcome or an ending, because to me, law of attraction is default mode. So if you don't look at something, or if you don't even know that you're not looking at something, you're still going to draw it to you. because you come in as a big energetic bubble, a big energetic, radiating, vibrant being. And so when you draw things to you, it is all you that you see, even the stuff you don't like. And it doesn't mean you're engaging in it today, but energetically, you're drawing to you that which you are. I'll give you a quick, for instance, like near-death experiences. If you ever read up on work around that, people, when they die and then they come back, depends on what culture they were raised in, what religion they were raised in. That's what they will see for their end life story. They'll see who they are, what that culture has told them that frequency is. Some people will see Jesus. Some people will see Buddha. Some people will see the Garden of Eden. Some people, you know, Muhammad, who knows? Like, they will see who they are. What I love to see, and what I do see, is that I don't see the form. I see the frequency. Because it's just all those beings, from my perspective, they're all the same frequency. They're all the same energy. But they just have different forms. And so we cannot see anything that we're not. And either we're trying to make peace with it, understand it from a perspective, embrace it. There's something magnificent and juicy about what is in front of us. And if we could work with it that way, it doesn't mean we have to take everything in. If it's something negative, we don't have to kind of let that into our lives, but we can understand the suffering about it and then embrace it. You know, it's kind of that oneness factor.
And what really speaks to me is this idea of something I've been doing quite a bit with Jason, my mentor, around like operating at certain vibrations. And again, if everything is energy, well, frequency is right up there, right? And so it's, okay, right. how do you manage that energy? It's received in different frequencies. And so if you're able to, for want of another word, raise your vibration, then different people and different opportunities come into your life, and equally different bits of information. Like, there's information out there that's ready to be received by someone at a certain point of vibration. And if you're not able to hold that idea or hold that piece of information, it will just carry on till it finds the right place. And, right. And this is just such a mind-bending idea, because if everything is who you are, or you can't see what you're not, like the things that are frustrating you in your life, like if you're able to raise your frequency, then those will drop away. Or equally, other people that might be dragging you down in some senses. It's like, first, you've got to work on yourself if you want to change the world around you.
Right.
It's this sense of accountability that speaks so strongly to me that was definitely lacking in my younger years, and largely because of information. I just didn't understand that that was even a way of doing things.
Yeah.
And so can you speak more around then this idea of how you can play with your vibration, what difference that can make on a day-to-day basis?
Right. Well, okay. There's some fun stuff to unpack there. So for sure, it's like a radio signal, mm-hmm. a radio dial. So there's different stations that are out there. And if you want to go ahead and, like you said, say like there's bits of information that you want to get to, then raising your vibration for sure to get there and to receive it is, to me, what that means when people say raise their vibration. To me, there's a little bit more behind it. And what I say to that, it's about alignment. Alignment of our four bodies. So again, I'm kind of leaning into this holistic, practical, traditional Chinese medicine, holistic viewpoint.
Yeah,
that's where great. It's the spiritual body, the mental body, the emotional body, and the physical body. Four bodies. Imagine that they are your babies or your cute little animals or something. And you say to yourself, do I have a favorite body? Do I have a least favorite body? Do I overwork one? Do I underwork the other? When we get those in alignment, it can sustain the frequency that we want in order to receive this information.
Interesting. Okay.
So what does sustain mean? Sustain means kind of work with it on a daily basis. And what I don't find useful or helpful or sustainable is when we just kind of pop into that high frequency and then we come back down and we think, well, gosh, maybe bad people are around us, or this is really harsh. I mean, it's good to understand that, to say what's going on here. But I don't feel that we could just tune out of that. I feel like it is here for us to work through, to own, to get our four bodies in alignment when we're working with the hardship. And if then they just kind of fall away, and for sure saying, you know, my emotional body doesn't like being around this person or this situation, maybe I'll choose different and say no. When you start getting healthy, like holistically healthy, your vibration automatically raises, and it just doesn't automatically raise. It remains sustainable. So then you don't just have to pop in and out of that frequency.
Cool.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. So to me, that's like some of an analogy being some health practitioners that will talk about treating the root cause.
Yes.
Versus the conventional kind of pharmaceutical led, like let's deal with symptoms. And so in this instance, if you can get alignment in those four areas, then actually the frequency deals with itself. And I love that, right? It's
the byproduct.
Yeah. Your foundations are stronger.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned the subconscious. And so 90% or 95% of us is the subconscious.
Right.
Why were you drawn to investigating what that means? And what does it mean?
Well, I mean, being a numbers gal, it's like, ooh, that's a lot of untapped territory. I think I want to go over there.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, I don't know. It just kind of made sense. And I've always been intrigued in that kind of, with that kind of underworld, the shadowy stuff. To me, it's just the truth. Like, there's nothing more attractive than getting to the bottom of things for me. One, some of my favorite work to do ever outside of my past life work is, you know, for years I worked as, they call it now a death doula, but when I was doing it, that name wasn't it. It was in the early 2000s, because it's just, to be around that truth is utter magic. And it's an honor in every way, because everything goes away and you get right to the core of things, right? And so the subconscious, if that is what's forming us, then let's go there, man, because at the end of your days, it's going to show up anyway. And so instead of like waiting till that moment, do it now. It's going to come. We are here as individuals, I believe, to experience our subconscious. That's why we're seeing it, because we wouldn't go there on our own. So it comes to us. So it, just shifting the paradigm of the mind and saying, I'm going to go to what I get a charge out of. To me, that's the paradigm shift that we're moving into right now. It's not so much saying, if it doesn't make you happy, run away from it. I'm like, well, okay. I mean, you could do that, but good luck, because wherever you go, there you are. It's going to keep coming. Of course, I'm not saying stay in an abusive situation. Don't run in front of a train. These are not the things I'm saying. I'm saying that deal with what keeps showing up and be utterly true, all four bodies, all utterly true with yourself. Express, make decisions, get out of the habitual way, get into the subconscious, say, why does this keep showing up? Explore it. And then guess what? Then you're clear of it even more, because you went to the root of it in that subconscious way. Like, you ran towards it instead of try to think it away from you.
Yeah, and it's that process of doing the work, which, I mean, like any business offering will basically say, pay me, we do the work, you get what you need. But actually, in this instance, it's like, you have to do that yourself. I guess it's about being open-minded to that and actually attempting to do it. And so when you have a better grasp on, maybe I'll give an example of somewhere else I've seen this recently, is Loz and I were watching some Joe Dispenza documentaries, and mm-hmm. he's very, very articulate around how you can play with the subconscious by using meditation. Mm-hmm. But perhaps you could give some examples, like when you start to understand the subconscious is really driving things versus the conscious. Like, can you speak with the subconscious? Can you manage the subconscious? What does that actually look like?
Well, luckily, one way, there's a couple ways. Like I have my Into the Mystic, which I know that your family is familiar with. And so that names that subconscious story for each chakra, right? It actually brings up the past life that initiated that. But subconscious is also really driven by emotion, from my perspective. So when you feel something and there is a charge like you had when you read that book, or there's a charge around, gosh, this bothers me with so-and-so or this situation, or whenever I hear it, I get a little something. A lot of people in the current paradigm, oftentimes it'll say, well, don't go there. Look away from that. Think good thoughts. And it's like, okay, yeah, keep that in mind. But I like to say, run to it, man, run to it. If there is a charge that is a nugget that is giving you a clue that there is something in the subconscious calling you. And Bruce Lee, don't think, feel. Mm. Feeling is the way to purify. Because when you go to it and you let it come up and out, it is you're voicing for something that didn't have a voice before. You're meeting it and doing it very consciously, working through it. So then you're no longer subconsciously afraid of it, tucking it over here, making a choice over there to scoot around it. I've seen it all, like in all these years within myself and with my clients. It's like, it's best to just say, if you're feeling something, run to that. And be like a spiritual journalist. I call it like a spiritual journalist, and say, where do you come from? Who, what, where, when, why, and how? What is this? And you sit down and you have a cup of tea with it, and it sucks and you may freaking hate it. But when you embrace it and lean into it, it's no longer the monster that you're tiptoeing around. It doesn't rule your life. It's no longer subconscious. You've brought it to the light of day.
Awesome. To now ask the more general question I was touching on before, rather than using myself as an example, can you talk us through any kind of standout stories of people making progress as a result of this work that come to mind? Like, what would someone have come to you being like, this is going on, and at the end of the experience, they'd managed to solve that problem?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, for instance, with my Into the Mystic program, what I do is I work with each chakra. So we go to a past life in each chakra, and each chakra has a different theme. It has a different story and a different feeling tone about somebody's life. And so when you can see the life, the origination point, and it has a theme, and I don't know how it happens. It's magic how it happens, but it does. And people will hear the story and they'll say, oh my gosh, this is what I've been going through a majority of my life. It's crazy. Physically, mentally, emotionally, it's there. And I said, good. Now you know the origination. In that life, that's as far as you could go. In this life, you're the medicine of it. So then what we do is we look at it. We name it. We talk to it. And then when the same themes come up in this life, there's some distance now, because you can place that understanding of that initial wound, that initial trauma over here. And you can know that you have a different opportunity. You have a different capacity to be with that trauma in a whole new way. And for instance, I had, I'm trying to think of one offhand, a client not long ago that doing the Mystic, and for her, it was definitely Pompeii. She was in Pompeii and at the time, and she was a woman in that life as well, which we could be men or women, you know, really doesn't matter. And in that life, her husband was wonderful, and they would do, she was very much a mystical woman in that life. They would do like healing ceremonies. They would kind of play with those higher arts, but they had to keep it a secret. They couldn't let it be that way. And at the time, Pompeii was, from what I saw, I don't know it historically, but energetically, it was very political. It was a certain class of people. And so that the woman was kind of doing this was, had to be a secret, had to be kept secret. And so they ended up finding out, whisper, rumor had it. And so she got pushed back. She got held back. Her and her family were held back. And then when Mount Vesuvio blew, she was in it and her family had died there. And so it was called the High Council. Like, that's what they kept saying, the High Council. And so she's like, oh my gosh, this is exactly what's going on in my life right now. It has been going on a majority of my life. And now that I know that it stems from that and that person couldn't get out, I no longer feel like I can't get out because I see how in that life she really couldn't. Like in that time and space, women were not, didn't have the freedoms that they do now, at least for where she's at in the world. You know, she's in a different space. So now she's like, oh my God, I get it. And even just speaking to it, when you witness something and you bring it out of the depths, it has a space to erode. It's not encapsulated, repeating itself. Like when you let it out, it's like, oh my gosh, it's out. And she hears it and she's like, I'm not alone in this. It doesn't envelop me. It's out here now. It's free. And so she has been able to, since then, speak to men differently, put that down that she doesn't have the freedom. It was still in her that she believed she didn't, that she was still had to get like approval from men in her life or authorities in her life, hide her sacred self. Now she's like, heck no. And she's bringing it out all the time. She's like, I get it now. It shifted her not only here, but in here. It shifted her on the inside as well.
Wow. Beautiful words, Janine. Thanks. And it's just so powerful, isn't it? The ability to go and actually do this. It's kind of like the ability to observe absolves. So when you're actually able to bring whatever it is that's been sitting there subconsciously to the conscious and say, okay, well, now that I've seen it, it's not as scary. It's actually making me think of a children's book that we've got. It's a book about why you get scared. Daddy Bear turns on the lights, and it's actually not the silhouette of a monster, but the silhouette of a bunch of cardboard boxes and one of their cuddly toys. Right. And so when you see it for what it is, it's actually not scary.
Right.
And that's incredibly powerful, right? Because we spend so much of our time walking around in our little monkey brains thinking about all this crazy shit that's got, it's just right. Pointless in many ways.
We don't know the origination of it.
Yeah.
So I call past lives, I say they're like children. You know, say like you were on the phone and you were on with a friend and all of a sudden your little one says, Daddy, look what I drew. You're like, hold on, honey. Daddy, look what I drew. Hold on. And then they just get louder and louder and louder and louder. So finally you put the phone down and you look, because they've thrown themselves on the floor. What do you want? And you look at it and then they're like, okay, fine. And then they're off.
And they're off
and
again.
And friends are the same way. They give you an opportunity to go back to the same feeling tone, to go back to the same story. But you're doing it to, once you hear it, you're expanded, so you could bring a whole different expanded output to it. Mm. And it releases out of your nervous system. It releases out of the subconscious, so you didn't even know it was there. That's the foundational stuff.
This is what makes me really think about, like, you know, any future business opportunities that I might have or relationships generally. When people haven't done this kind of work, they're not operating at the same level as you. And therefore, it's like, should we have a discussion about a topic? Go and read these five books. And they turn up for the debate having read none of them, but with a bunch of pre-existing opinions. Mm-hmm. And that's okay.
Right.
Like, no judgment on that per se, but just like, you're not batting off the same playing field.
No.
And I think certainly one of my lessons is any serious business relationship I have in the future, I would like to be with people that have done some of this work. You know, they've really started to ask questions about how they think, why they think the way they do, and how to play around with some of these tools. Because I think the overarching thing for me is it just helps with decision making, and better decision making can't be a bad thing. I don't know where this will go, which will be why it's interesting. But as an investor, I'm a big advocate for Bitcoin, and I'm focused very heavily on that market. And one of the reasons I'm such a big advocate for it is I see it's completely obsoleting central banks and the way that existing financial markets work. It's a digital gold that's going to displace a whole load of status quo institutions. And the way that we see the world today is going to be very different in a couple of years' time. But a big part of that is some work I've done around reading books such as The Fourth Turning. So this is a concept, I don't know if you've heard of it before, where it's actually the Romans even named it way back when, which they called it a saeculum. So it's basically an 80-year period. And in an 80-year period, which is roughly the lifespan of a human, the experience of that one human dissipate with the next generation. So the son of someone will remember the experience their parent had and make decisions based on that memory. The reason history rhymes is because things happen again and again, but we tried right. them before and all the rest of it. So in summary, this particular window of time we're in right now, I see as a what's called a fourth turning. And so a huge period of change, of revolution, of war, of death, and then ultimately the rebirth of something new. So when you're looking at the birth charts of people, or equally any of the other areas of expertise that you've picked up, like, what is 2025? And are there anything, does any of that resonate with you, what I just discussed?
Oh, yeah. And I'm so sorry, we only have a few more minutes.
We can go a little over. Just I tried to cut it off.
Oh no! You do what you got to do. I will absolutely try to condense it. Well, astrologically speaking, it's what I love to say is that, you know, historically, which is what astrologers do, that we look at trends and patterns, right? Not unlike the financial markets. And so it's fun to look over thousands of years, like what has gone on, and we learn from those patterns. And then we bring those patterns forth to understand the stars, right? And so, because they're all cyclical and they all move in different rhythms and rhymes. And so typically, what has gone on in other generations, maybe one over here 246 years ago, when Pluto was at the last degree of Capricorn, it's called the fall of the empires, because every country has a Pluto and Capricorn event, happens once every 246 years, only meaning it takes them that long to go around the horn and to come back. That's happening in the United States right now. So last time that happened was 1776. Oh. Look what's
You're
going
kidding
on.
Me.
So that was that was in and of itself a big deal. Okay. Then we have this Neptune with Saturn up in the sky together at this final degree of Pisces, which is ultra rare. It's so rare it happened 1 BC. Last time they happened. That didn't even happen with the North Node. Okay. And it's based on how quickly the planets move around. And then when they come together like that, right? And so that happened that long ago. And then we have Uranus, which I know you and I had a little chat about this. That's an 83-year cycle. So that 80, that factor you were speaking of. Last time he was at the end of Taurus stepping into Gemini was the 30s, late 30s and 40s. And so this was the time around, you know, World War II was just starting. And then the time before that, 83 some years before that, and this is just in America as well, because that's where I'm in Santa Fe, it was the Civil War and then the Revolutionary War. When you go back historically, those time frames. So it's not to say that, and it's going to be here, all three of those, just those alone, and there's more, but those three are happening in 2025 all together. So it's like a smoothie. It's like these singular planetary events that were very, in and of themselves, generational markers, historically.
And so, Janine, just
this year,
you're so true about like patterns and financial markets as well. Because I would look, you know, let's say you did some technical analysis on a potential purchase or sale of an asset. You can take all manner of different metric, whether that's like RSI or stochastic RSI or fear and greed, or just there's tons of different things you can take. Well, these three astrological convergence these moments are converging in this one year. Like, what do you think that means will happen?
Here we go. That's all that means. And it's, I feel like on a soul level, every single one of us knew that this was coming. This is why we're here. And it is, I tagged this a couple of years ago. I do mantras a lot. I love to kind of condense things down. I called it good grief. And it's really, grief, not like, and I'm not, I don't want to push fear. That's not it. It's just that if you know that an ending of an identity is here, then surrender. And it's also an opportunity to stretch our faith and to see, you know, we all say that, not all, but many people will say that they're spiritual beings. They believe in oneness, the God factor, creator, whatever it is. And this is really a moment that we could stretch that. It's what I call it is the second album syndrome. you know, I'm a product of the 80s. So it's like, you know, you're an awesome rock star, Steve Perry from Journey. You know, it's like you make the first album, it's like unstoppable. And then you sit there with the second album, you're like, I mean, maybe he didn't think it, but I could imagine, you know, you sit there and you're like, is this going to be as good as the other? And if you're really afraid of it, it just keeps you in the cycle and in the loop subconsciously of not having the courage to say, fuck it. That identity is over. I'm just going to surrender to that. And I'm going to really move into this. And we've had eons, and I don't look at time really as time. It's more like space, but it's numerical. So let's call it time. We've had all this time to say, I'll do it. Give me a minute. There's no more minutes. And what I love to say about this time and space that we live in is that, you know, the good news is we don't have to die to have a reboot. The bad news is we don't have to die to have a reboot. Because the hard part is, can we let our conscious mind get over the old ego story that we've been telling ourselves and just really shed that and let us go where spirit wants to take us? You know, war only happens when change isn't allowed. We say we want change, but then we don't, you know, how typically, you know, somebody doesn't want it. But regardless, it's time. The big dissolving is here. Pisces and Neptune is all about dissolving away. So just soften the knees, surf the wave that comes, and trust who you are and let go, because the whole new world is underfoot.
Awesome. And that feels like a brilliant way to say thank you very much for an awesome conversation. Thank you, Janine.
Thank you.
My last question is, if people want to reach out and get in touch, what's the best way to do that?
My website, JanineKim.com. I'm not really a social media person, so, but come get me over there. JanineKim.com. Yeah.
I'll put that in the show notes so people will be able to find it very easily. Janine, thank you so much for sharing all of that today. It's been awesome to learn from you.
You're welcome, Jay. Thank you for having me. I loved everything.
My pleasure. Thank you, Janine.